And Senate Resources will come to order. Time now is 3:40 on February the 4th. We have with us Senator Green, Senator Stevens, myself Huggins, Senator Stedman, Senator Wilikowski, and Senator Wagner. Senator McGuire is excused. Today, in our continuing quest to hear from those that submitted applications, we have with us a Little Susitna Construction and their prime subcontractor Sinopec, and the president and CEO of Little Susitna Construction, Mr. Dominic Lee. And Mr. Lee, I'll let you introduce your party.
My name is Dominic Lee. I'm the president. And on my left is my general manager, Mrs. Tammy Smith. And on my right is Mr. Wayne Lewis. I just met him 1 month ago. I never know this guy, but he volunteered to help out. I wish I know him before I write a proposal. So, but there he is.
Thank you very much, and thank for that introduction. Of course, we'll have to physically or put our officially put ourselves on the record here in a moment. I'd just like to draw to the attention of the committee that in your packet is a completeness determination, which is dated the 4th of January, from the administration to Mr. Lee. And Mr. Lee, you have a copy of this too, right, with you? This is the letter that came back to you from the governor in reference to your application? Okay. Well, Mr. Lee, you and I don't know one another other than we met at a World Trade Center luncheon and had a short discussion. I was impressed by everything you said and do. Appears to be, you know, with a lot of merit. And I've heard the comments about the quality of the preparation that you put into what we're fixing to hear from you. But most important, I'd just like to impress upon you that we say thanks for putting in an application, number two in that. You know, we think it's appropriate, in this case, the Senate Resources, that those that put in applications and some that anticipated to put in that did not, it'll ask us here. And today, we welcome you here in that spirit. And so if you would officially put yourself on the record with whom you represent in your title and name, then we can go forward.
Okay. I would like to have general manager tell you the overview of the project.
Okay, Tammy, if you would just state, just officially, yes.
Okay, my name is Tammy Smith. Okay. I'm with Little Susitna Construction.
And slide the mic up a little bit because you'll be, yeah, there you go.
My name is Tammy Smith. I'm with Little Susitna Construction Company.
Okay.
And I'd like to give you an overview of the Alaskan's First Gas Pipeline Proposal. That was submitted on November 30th by Little Susitna Construction Company with our subcontractor, Sinopec ZPEB. Okay. First of all, what is the Alaskan's First Gas Pipeline Project? It is an all-Alaska project that proposes to build an 800-mile, 48-inch gas pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez along the TAPS corridor. This pipeline size is designed to deliver 4.5 to 5 billion cubic feet per day, or 5 BCF/D, expandable up to 7 BCF per day. Our proposal planned a gas pipeline that would terminate in Valdez at Anderson Bay, just 2 miles beyond the current Alyeska oil pipeline terminal. Our plan proposed that we build a liquid natural gas facility at Anderson Bay, and a natural gas liquid, or an NGL plant, and an LNG storage plant at Anderson Bay. Since we submitted our proposal, we've discussed some things, and it may be possible to do the NGL plant somewhere else within the state. A marine terminal will also need to be built at Anderson Bay for the docking and loading of LNG tankers. Our subcontractor, Sinopec, has proposed to provide 20 LNG tankers to transport LNG from Valdez to China. This is a $7 billion value that is not a part of our proposed cost. And that's probably not a typical day in Valdez, that picture there, but Okay, we also proposed a 24-inch spur line from Glen Allen to Beluga that would be built to supply South Central Alaska with gas for home heating and electric generation. Now, most probably, this spur line would be subcontracted to Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority, or ANGDA, have them design and build it, because they have so much of the preliminary engineering and environmental studies complete already, so it would be no sense to duplicate those efforts.
And if I could just stop you right there, have you done any coordination with them at all, Harold Hines and Company?
I talked to Dale Hines after the proposal was submitted.
Okay.
And he invited me to his office, and we talked about we can work together as a team, maybe possible with Alaska Port Authority as a team, or other member in Alaska can join us to do the project together.
Yeah, thank you.
In accordance with the GIA, we proposed a minimum of 5 delivery points would be provided at such locations as Fairbanks, North Pole, Delta Junction, Glen Allen, and Valdez. And of course, depending on supply or demand, those could be changed. We also proposed propane and LNG would be shipped from Valdez to over 100 Alaska communities for heating and electricity generation use. An all-Alaska LNG project would provide 20,000 construction jobs over 3 to 4 years to build the pipeline, and approximately 5,000 good-paying permanent jobs to operate and maintain the infrastructure for the next 30 to 50 years. This project would also create good permanent jobs in support of associated industries such as the petrochemical industry, transportation, and of course the distribution facilities of these byproducts. So there is a picture of our proposed project, and the little red dots are like the proposed places where propane would be shipped to. Okay, who makes up the Alaskans First Gas Pipeline Project team? First of all, it's Little Susitna Construction Company, or LSCC, I'll be referring to us as LSCC from now on, with the support of its Chinese subcontractor, Sinopec. Now, due to the size of this project, it's anticipated that up to 20 other U.S. and Alaskan companies will be involved in completing this project. LSCC is a 28-year-old Alaska firm providing architectural engineering, construction, and construction management throughout all of Alaska and also 10 lower 48 states. LSCC is headed by Dominic Shifong Lee, PE. Mr. Lee has a Bachelor's of Science and a Master's of Science degrees in Electrical Engineering, a Master's degree in Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering, and all these are obtained from the University of Missouri at Columbia. Mr. Lee also has 3 years of graduate study in Arctic and Civil Engineering at UAA. Now, Mr. Lee has been practicing as a professional mechanical engineer and professional electrical engineer since 1974, and he holds these dual mechanical and electrical PE licenses in Alaska and 10 other states. Now, LSCC got its start in Alaska by designing multiple projects on the North Slope for ARCO's Kuparuk oil field. They did that for 10 years. So we're very aware of the harsh conditions and what it takes to operate on the North Slope. Since 1980, LSCC has been providing construction and construction management services for projects all over the state of Alaska for clients such as the U.S. Coast Guard, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Air Force, U.S. Army, GSA, U.S. Postal Service, State of Alaska Department of Transportation, the City of Barrow, City of Valdez, City of Bethel, Fairbanks North Star Borough, Mat-Su Borough, Municipality of Anchorage, as well as many other local governments and school districts. Okay, now, who is Sinopec? Sinopec is the second largest oil and gas company in China. Sinopec is comparable in size to ConocoPhillips, with 2006 revenues of $155 billion and $9.2 billion in profits. Sinopec is traded on the New York Stock Exchange and has over 500,000 employees in China and overseas. Now, as far as this project goes, Sinopec does not want to own any part of the Alaskans First Gas Pipeline. They don't want to operate the gas pipeline. Sinopec wants to purchase LNG from Alaska for several reasons. One, they know that Alaska gas will be a stable and secure energy source. A diverse supply of energy is prudent business, and the Chinese are also eager to purchase Alaska resources other than what they currently do, such as in the lumber and fishing industries. They also want to purchase LNG to help balance their trade with the U.S. Three divisions of Sinopec would be involved in the Alaskan's first gas pipeline project. The first one would be Sinopec ZYEC, the design branch of Sinopec Engineering Company. ZYEC has 400 licensed engineers and technicians that design oil and gas pipelines, pressure pipelines, oil gas gathering facilities, long-distance pipeline design, and LNG plants. ZYEC has designed all of Sinopec's oil and gas projects since 1980, including the 2,200-kilometer gas pipeline from Sichuan to Shanghai. I'm not sure I pronounced that right.
Right.
Okay. Okay, here's a picture of Sinopec ZPEB. They're responsible for construction and operation of Sinopec's oil and gas fields in China. They build and operate gas pipelines, oil pipelines, and LNG facilities. Sinopec ZEP's role in the Alaskan's first gas pipeline will be to serve as Little Susitna's general contractor for the pipeline and the LNG facilities and coordinate the purchase of steel and equipment. That's something we're going to find out a little bit more about how important that is later on. Okay, then at last we have Sinopec International. Sinopec International is the division that has authority to approve or disapprove any of Sinopec's international activities. This division of Sinopec was the entity that provided the authorization for our teaming agreement and also the division that will assist us with providing financing for this project. Okay, now I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Lee to explain to you why the Alaskan's first gas pipeline is what's best for Alaska, the Alaska citizens, and the United States.
My name is Dominic Lee again. I'm the president, and also I wrote a proposal myself, mostly, with some help from my staff and some petroleum engineer. To begin with, I would like to let you know that I received an email from a friend. It's very interesting. The topic, the question is, what is the definition of globalization? The answer, Princess Diana's death. The question is, how come? The answer, say, an English princess with the Egyptian boyfriend crashed in a French tunnel driving a German car with a Dutch engine driven by a Belgian who was drunk on Scotch whiskey. Followed closely by the Italian Pallarassi on a Japanese motorcycle, treated by American doctor using Brazilian medicine. And this is sent by you, to you by an Irishman using Bill Gates technology. And you probably reading this on your computer that use Taiwanese chip and a Korean monitor assembled by Bangladesh worker in a Singapore plant, transported by an Indian lorry driver hijacked by Indonesian and unloaded by the Sicilian longshoreman and trucked to you by a Mexican illegal. That's my friend, is globalization.
Mr. Lee, thank you very much. Well, you've done a service for me. Some of us went over to China this summer. When I came back, it was my observation that having visited and lived in a number of different countries around the Orient Pacific Rim, that the Chinese people have by far the best sense of humor, and you just made my case for me once again.
Thank you, sir.
Very good. And if I could just call attention to that we have with us Representative Kurt Olson and Senator Senator Joe Thomas. I'd like to welcome you. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator, for coming. Appreciate you coming.
And with that, let's continue, please.
Now, why the Alaska First Gas Pipeline Project is best for Alaska, Alaskan, and the United States? That's my topic. The Alaskan First Gas Pipeline proposal brought to the table with a 30-year commitment to buy your natural gas for market value prices. It, from today's prices, $10 to $12 a million BTU to $20 a million BTU, that will be a trade surplus to the United States between $500 billion to $800 billion, which is we have $200 billion deficit every year to China. Before I start this project, I studied three routes. I studied the one from Poudre Bay to Chicago, Poudre Bay to Beluga Field, and then Poudre Bay to Valdez. And I know that the governor was for all Alaska pipeline during her campaign. So I say, this must be the right one. And I do all the comparison of a three route. The first route is go to Chicago. It's a 3,600 miles long. You want to bring the gas to lower 48. It requires you to have a 72 compressor station. Each compressor station will using lots of energy, and then the price you go down to Chicago will be they call it Chicago hub prices, the Henry hub prices, which is about $7, $8 maximum you can get. And look at the route to Wasilla, go to Wasilla to Beluga oil field. And that route, I had to tee off from Fairbanks. That means I got to go to lots of state land, federal land, native land, and private land, and borough land. That means you got to get lots of environmental study, permitting. It will take a long time to get it. Plus, the land at Beluga Field was a fat mud area, which is you require lots of gravel to make the foundation to put your plan on it, and also it's not suitable for big tanker, the 150,000 ton tanker, because of ice in the winter time, and also it's not that deep, very shallow water, so the third route is to Valdez. The Valdez line already have the Alyeska pipeline existing with a corridor as wide as 2 miles wide. So I should be able to put the natural gas line side by side to it. And the permit already there, because it had been done before, 3 times already, for environmental impact statement study. And also, at Valdez, near the terminal, the land is almost all rock, is resistant to earthquake, and also you got a deep water, ice free deep port all year round. And plus, you have the advantage if you can talk to the Alyeska pilot to share the security, share the maintenance, that will save lots of money, which in turn lower your tariff rate. That's why I decided to choose the all Alaska route to Valdez, just for economic reason as well as other reason I mentioned to you. So,
Mr. Lee, while you're going through that portion, you mentioned the 72 compressors stations. If you took the southern route down through Canada, as I recall,
go to Canada, go to Calgary, go to Chicago.
Chicago, right.
Go to could calculate, you need about 32
right.
compressor, which was confirmed by the winning proposal too. Go to Chicago, you need 71, yep. I think, 71 compressor yep. station.
As I recall, you had reflected on the amount of gas you consume in that process with those stations.
I give all the preliminary requirement for how many compressor I need, and also I asked the solar turbine compressor manufacturer, which is a unit of United Technology. They make a big compressor, and they make the calculation. Once the computer told me it will take 11.5 mega million. That means a million cubic foot per day per station to run those compressor and the chiller. And to Chicago is about 20% of the gas. To Calgary is about 8.3% of the gas. You gotta waste it on burning burning the gas for the compressor. This is from the factory calculation, not from me, but very close to my calculation too.
So the factory that that's their calculation based on their equipment.
Yeah.
And then your calculations generally validated that. Is that what you said?
Exactly. My calculation is based on that. My thinking, you know.
Yes.
Because at that time you get a choice for Rolls-Royce BL-21 compressor, or you can using a Titan solar turbine Titan 130 or 250, or you can using GE 125. You know, they all make the same kind of stuff, but some of them are more efficiency than the other one, but they are in about 5% ranges. So my number is pretty correct. It was confirmed by the manufacturer. You take it to Chicago, take you about 19.5% of the gas, which will be subsidized by the state of Alaska to push the gas from Little Bay to Chicago. And that amount to $1.1 billion a year. If the price is $8, and if the price is $16, you in the future it will amount to $2.2 billion a year, subsidized by the state of Alaska. You add 30-year lifetime, you talk about $33 billion to $66 billion subsidized from Alaska to move the gas to lower 48.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Wagner.
Those 72 compressor stations. Is that based on your top end throughput of 7 BCF a day?
4.5.
That's a 4.5?
4.5 BC. That is the 71, and also that was from the same amount of compressor station also show up at the TransCanada proposal too. Is about six.
I don't think that's what I read in TransCanada's proposal last week.
60,000 horsepower per station.
I had to go back and read.
Yeah. Those. 55 to 60 horsepower per station.
Yeah, good. Thank you, Mr. Lee. If you continue.
Okay. Now, the next page is my teaming agreement, which I received with the Sinopec, and with the approval of the board of director, and have a chart which is on the next pages. This is the government approval chart. It's very important. That means the binding document. They will honor everything that has chart like this on it. On the bottom, the chart has some number which is their code. Which is the right there, yeah. And
Senator Huggins, excuse me,
yes.
For the record, let's be clear, if you don't understand what he's saying, the word is CHOP.
CHOP.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I got it. I got it. Yeah, no, that's...
Yeah, that's seal.
We got it. We got it.
And in China, it's very important. You,
yes.
You don't have
oh, yes.
to seal.
Oh, yeah.
You,
oh yes. No, absolutely.
You,
we got that.
So this is after 5 days talking back and forth with a three division people and lots of dinner and and wine and and to come up with that piece of paper.
Yeah. Did you get to go to the Great Hall to make this happen?
No, I went to the biggest oil field called Zhongyuan oil field near Puyang City, which is inside China, about 500 miles southwest of Beijing, in the middle of nowhere, except all oil field. The whole city has 400,000 population, and everyone work for one company, Sinopec.
Oh.
So this is the genuine contract, and the original signature was submitted to the Algeria with our proposal. So, and
so you had a closed loop system where you had your, if you backward from China, it was approved your concept and your partnership with Sinopec. Sinopec had signed on as your subcontractor.
Yeah.
And then the missing link was getting through the process in Alaska. Is that
exactly? If they can go ahead tomorrow, you've got to we give him a go ahead.
Right. Okay.
And that means they will commit that piece of paper. That means they will commit the whole the three division work on this project. They have 400 engineer right away to work on it. And in Alaska part, I can start subcontract 20 U.S. and Alaska engineering and environmental company and surveyor, everybody to work on the project too, because they cannot do everything. We got to do half the work here. But they have expertise to design pipeline and LNG facility. In fact, they are doing one in Sichuan to Shanghai right now, 22 kilometer long. It'll cross the Yangtze River 5 times. Big project, and that's why they have experience, and they got the expertise, and they also have the money to do it.
Would you remind us quickly the experience that Sinopec has with LNG?
Sinopec designed all the LNG work for Alaska, for China, and now they are working on some LNG plant in Middle East. They got office in Saudi Arabia, Dubai, Qatar, Ecuador, and Kazakhstan. They all work with them.
Yes.
Okay. And
yes, Senator Wilikowski.
Can I just like to ask a kind of a technical question? How many BCF do the tankers hold? How many BCF does each one hold?
The tanker, they don't hold by BCF, they hold by meter square.
Meter cubic.
Is each tanker, the big one is 150,000 meter cubic to 185 meter cubic, the LNG tanker.
So how would that translate if we're talking a 4.5 BCF line? Would that be a day's supply?
They go by ton. You see, when the gas become liquid, it go by ton.
Okay.
In a way, this will require 20 tanker running between, my calculation is between Baudi to China all year round. You require 20 tanker, which will give you 8 day traveling time, 2 day loading, 2 day unloading to deliver 30 million ton of LNG to China.
Senator, I can appreciate what you're getting at. When I first got involved in this many years ago, I concluded that there was every conversion except board feet involved in getting natural gas from its vapor state to as a delivered liquid into Asia. So I know where you're headed. And I can't do the conversion
in
my head.
Do you know, roughly, is day, if I could, I'm just trying to figure out in my head, how many days supply, I mean, how many BCF?
If, Mr. Lee, if you just thought about opening the spigot, how many days of opening the spigot based on the 48-inch line to be able to fill up a tanker, I think is a fundamental question.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how, and that's okay if you don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
I can't remember.
That's fine.
I don't know the but I know
the conversion.
The conversion, right. But they're in metric system. We are in gallon, and they're in liter. You know.
Thank you.
Okay. The next one is called the letter of intent. Now, this is the letter of intent worth between $500 billion to $800 billion, depending on the price of the LNG price in the future. And the letter of intent say Sinopec agreed to buy that much LNG of a 4 BCD a day, which is equivalent to about 30 million ton a year, every year for the next 30 years. But they're not locking you on any prices. They will give you a bucket prices. Whatever the current prices in Asia selling, they will pay you a good prices. For example, they just bought 900 million tons of crude oil from Iraq last week on a long-term contract. But how much price they pay? Their contract say, I read the contract, say, if today is February the 4th, we will using the day of February the 3rd, the 2nd, the 1st, and January 31, 4 days average prices to give you the price for February the 4th. So they are not trying to nickel and dime you. They will pay you whatever a good current market prices we call basket prices.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And
We have one follow-up from Senator Wilikowski.
Yes. In the U.S., we have the Henry Hub, and it's about $7 or $8 per MCF. Do you know what the comparable price is in China?
Right now, I think it's selling between 10 to 12. Mm. Wow. But then, according to the government's U.S. government's Energy Information Agency (EIA) projection, by the time we finish building the project, it will probably go up to $20 in average in those 30 years. So you get $20 average in 30 years, you're talking about $800 some billion trade. And I can, at the end of this proposal, I have a comparison.
Okay.
To you.
Yeah, when we get to that.
Okay. Next pages. Okay. Now, what is this Alaska First Pipeline project is for Alaskan. First of all, we got to have this pipeline. I believe myself, my opinion, only China can do it very swiftly, because they have the asset to the steel. Since the steel deregulation, this country is losing all the steel industry completely, because they cannot compete. So the only steel mill we have is like Ladue Steel Mill in St. Louis, and some steel mill in Utah, but they all make using scrap metal to make steel on a small scale. But in order to make that the Alaska First Gas Pipeline from Puto Bay to Valdez, is 800 miles of 4 feet piping, X70. It's almost 1,000 pounds per foot. And you use 1,000 pounds per foot times 5,280 foot per mile times 800 mile, you get lots of steel. So it's about 2.2 million ton. 2.2 million ton is a big sum of steel. Just think about even 30 years ago when Alyeska Pine Line built the oil pipeline is only 5/8 of inches thick. And this gas pipeline is 1 inch thick, which almost double the thickness. So it's a very, very demand to have that kind of steel to make it. And in this world right now, China make more than half the steel. The rest of them will be made by Poland, India, and Japan, and South Korea. But they combine together, make the other 40%. China makes 60%. And because Sinopec is a Chinese company owned by majority stockholder is the government, 76%. The bolt-on steel in China and the on-san steel in China, they also 100% owned by the Chinese government. So they will give them a quota, say, okay, since this is urgent for this project, we give Alaska Pipeline 2.2 million of the steel. So we want to make sure the delivery time, the quality meet the specification, and that's one of the advantages we have over other company because we have the manufacturer on our side.
Now, Mr. Lee, in that respect, I seem to remember you once upon a time mentioning that it would take Bo-On and potentially Nippon's production to meet the requirement.
Yeah, Nippon is
the equivalent.
Equivalent, yeah. Nippon can make some of the steel, but they cannot make it all by themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe they'll buy some from Nippon to make up the difference. Because China is using lots of steel now, like the Olympic game. They use a lot of steel to build 40,000 housing and all the stadium, all the big high-rise. I mean, they are very industrialized country now. All of a sudden, everybody wants the steel. So we are lucky to get steel from them.
Yeah. And if I might, the X-70 steel, is that an international standard?
Yeah, it's a international standard. X-70 means the steel have a yield strength for 65,000 to 70,000 pounds before it will buckle. And the pressure on the gas pipeline is only 2,500 pounds. So we get plenty. For example, if you use a X-100 steel, which is Canadian suggest to use, they don't make that kind of steel because it's extremely strong, you know. But the demand is not there, so they never make it. Today, if you put an order for X-100 steel, you order 1,700 mile. People will laugh at you. They say, I couldn't even get a 100 feet for you. That's how rare those the steel is. You don't use X-100. Normal pipe is X-60 to X-70. That's all the gas pipeline in the world. They're using this size, you know. But I don't know why people are using such a strong steel. Maybe they can put more gas on it. But other, this can make lots of gas too. This can stand up to 7 billion cubic feet already.
Right. Okay, good. Thank you.
This is also recommended by the Sinopec steel engineer. They say this is a good steel. We use it all over the world, he told me. Okay, next.
Senator Wagner.
At 7 BCF a day, 48-inch pipeline, how many, what's the PSI on that?
Still 2,500.
2,500?
Yeah.
Okay.
I also made a small calculation. If you get the steel to Chicago, it requires 10 million tons because the pipeline is 4.5 times longer than the Alaska first pipeline, because it's 3,600 miles instead of 800 miles. Mm-hmm. So that means impossible to get the steel.
So you're saying that supply-wise?
Supply, you cannot get any 10 million tons of steel for such a long project. You might have to wait 20 years to get that kind of steel.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Next page. Yeah. Now, in our proposal, the Alaska First Pipeline required the buyer to provide the shipping. You just bring your boat, come to Valdez and pick it up, so that the pipeline itself does not burden by the cost of the boat. One of those 150 to 185 cubic meter LNG boat cost about $300 million a piece. And it takes a long time to build one, too. So sometimes it takes 4 or 5 years to get one. And then on the one, you want to ship the LNG around Alaska, like from here to Kodiak, for example. You got to use a Zhongshan boat. Zhongshan boat, you got to build the hull and the engine in the United States and take it to China or Korea to put the refrigeration system in the boat. And those are little boats, even half the size, like 75,000 cubic meter, will cost you $250 million each, because American labor costs more.
Those guys in Kodiak are expensive, aren't they?
So, but we are providing gas to you all year round.
But they deserve everything they get.
That's right. Everybody in Alaska should deserve it. Every city, every village should have a cheap gas to heat the home, should have a cheap electricity, because the gas will generate electricity. And there's no reason why, as a gas producing, energy producing state, should have such a high heating cost. I traveled all over Alaska for the past 28 years. And I visit over 100 villages, and I would feel so sorry to see those people give half or one third of the income for heating the house. You talk to Venezuela and Iran and Iraq, people pay 30 cents a gallon for the gas. Why should we pay $3 for 1 gallon? But in the bush, you talk about $8. It's ridiculous. And the state have so much money from this project, they can even subsidize it and make sure everybody pay $50 a month for the heating bill and then $50 a month for the electricity bill, which is equivalent to $5,000 saving a year for a family. If I'm paying $400 or $500 a month now in Anchorage, so that is $6,000 a year of a gas bill and electricity bill. When I first came to Alaska in 1977, I paid $100 for both electricity and gas, and this is going our control. A good living, but still, a big portion of my income go to energy, which can be avoided very easily with my plan, with our Alaska plan, which is because the plan is owned by Alaskan, owned by the people here, because we own the gas. And why should we benefit ourselves instead of benefit other people? That's my point. Now, This one here, we are talking about spare line to Anchorage Mazoo area. We will, our plan with Alaska First Gas Pipeline, we including a 190 mile of a 2 feet diameter H70 gas pipeline to Beluga field, Beluga River field, they call it, to give energy to NSTAR so they can feed the whole South Central, including Palmer, Wasilla, Anchorage, Eagle River, down to Kenai, Homer area, take care of the half the state energy need. And then the rest of the gas will feed Juga Electric and MLMP so that we get cheap electricity too. And I have talked to Harold Hine and asked him if he's interested to be the subcontract on my project. He is, because he has done so much work already. And he's he'll be happy to help me out. Next one is a distribution to Ruto, Alaska. Now on this four and a half BC, what they call billion cubic feet a day of a natural gas. It comes with a lot of liquid with the gas. One of the big one is called propane, you know, like you get it from the gas station to put on your RV and your and it's portable. So what the Alaska First plan is, in Valdez, we separate the propane out from the gas and put the propane in a 5,000 propane tank, 5,000 gallon propane tank and 10,000 gallon propane tank. And they can be picked it up and put on the barge or on the boat and take it to Seward. My parent will take everything to Seward. Those are propane bottles. And from then on, you truck it by the train to Nenana, which is south of Fairbanks. And you put it on a barge in Nenana, and then it will flow down the Yukon River, which will take care of all the community, like Tanana, Galena, and Mountain Villages, Koyoko, Pilot Pond, Anakana, Emonik, all the town along the river. Will take care of the interior. And when the barge get to there, they will pick up the propane tank and take it on shore with a distribution center. And then from then on, they can take those bottles, put in a truck, and to go to every single family's home, which they will have a 1,000 gallon smaller tank, and fill them up for the whole year supply. And then they also fill up the tank at the electricity power plant, because most of them still are using diesel to generate. Now I give them a cheap propane tank, propane gas to generate electricity. It's very simple, just changing the office, the burner of the power plant will just a conversion, and you will change from oil to propane, and every community will be benefit from it. And then the rest one not on the river, we can take it by the boat to city like Savonga, Gamble, St. Paul Island, Dutch Harbor, and all the town, all the way up to Kotchebue area, to give the people in the villages so that they can distribute the propane tank to all the home, because the propane is one of the most versatile fuel. You can use it for heating your home, you can use it for cooking. You can using it for driving your car, and also it's cheap because we can provide cheap for them. we can get to them to at cost. It costs like $1.20 a gallon. That kind of range that I can imagine. But then for the big city, like from the southeast, you get Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau, and then you come up the chain, you get Cordova, you get Seward, Kodiak, Dillingham, Bethel, Nome, and Kotchebue. Those we can provide a LNG plant for them. In my proposal, I suggest the state should put some community block grant for them, or city to provide a LNG receiving station and storage facility so they can evaporate the liquid LNG and distribute to the city, to the gas pipe, just like they do in Fairbanks right now. The same concept. But then you're not paying $3 a gallon, you're paying $1 a gallon or less, because with the state subsidy and the cheap gas, we can take it out from Puto Bay. All the city, including Juneau, everybody can hit their home for $100, and the electricity bill will go way down to $50, like it was 1980 time. And this is a good plan. This will benefit every Alaska family, every people work here. Plus, it create lots of job. You got to create job for the sailor, for the people running the boat, for the people who run the crane, for the people who also you need lots of engineering architect to design the receiving station, and then you got lots of work for the people who dig the trenches and design the. Put up the pie in the ground and take it to every home. So that will be, and then after it's all said and done, you still have people to maintain those facilities, people to deliver continuously the product to every home. So you are creating a multi business job for the Alaska. Now the next one is. This job is good for Alaska for 20 to 50 years. That is including after the gas pipeline is built and all the compression station. We got about 10 to 14 compression station in this line. Plus you got the LNG factory, which will be the biggest LNG plant in United States, which can convert 4 BC billion cubic foot to LNG. There are no such plant bigger than this one. And from this plant, you also have the liquid plant to separate the liquid from the gas. And then the liquid can ship it to different city, like Fairbanks, can ship it to Kenai, and use it to make, or ship it to Wasilla, Willow, to make petrochemical product. See, you use a liquid to make petrochemical product instead of giving all this variable liquid to Canada and let the Canada petrochemical plant to make lots of money out of it. Instead, we, Alaska, will create our industry. We will create our petrochemical industry bigger than everybody else. And the people will be share the profit, the people will share the job opportunity, the people will share the benefit of it, instead of letting a foreign government, a foreign industry, get the benefit. Now the next one is called the natural gasoline I want to talk about is the Pantene, one of the products called Pantene from the liquid, came out from the gas. It's the same thing as a gasoline. In fact, you can just pick it out and put it in your car and it will run. It's called Pantene. It's a natural gasoline. Now, this gasoline, whether you like it or not, it comes with the gas. And it will come up to almost 10 to 20 million tons a year. Now, with this gas, what we plan to do is I give it to all the gas station, tell them to sell it at 30 cents a gallon, which is the cost. So basically, we are subsidizing people in the gas. It would not be enough to substitute for the whole Alaska use, but at least you can say this is a Pantene belong to Alaska. We want Alaska benefit for it. I mean, 30 cents a gallon is when I first come to the United States in 1962, it was selling about 30 cents a gallon. That was how long ago?
Yeah.
So the next one is opportunity to invest in the pipeline service as a public trading company. Now, the Sinopec is not interested in owning the company or operating it. So who going to do it? We got to create a new legal entity called Alaskan First Gas Pipeline Service Company. We are modeling the Alyeska Pipeline Gas Servicing Company in Fairbanks and Valdez. What it does, it will service the gas pipeline, service the LNG plant, service the marine terminal, and also service the liquid plant. And this company will be public trading, so any Alaskan can buy stock on it. If the oil company want to buy stock, they can buy stock too. If the state of Alaska want to buy stock using some permanent fund, buy the stock on this company, they can buy stock too. But whatever the profit from this company will be given out dividend to the stockholder, just like another public trading company. And all the people work there is all Alaskan. There are no Chinese work there, because Chinese are not interested. There will be just like Alyeska Pipeline, except right now it's owned by the three oil company, or four or five oil company, but it's not a trading public trading company as by itself. So I think that give an opportunity to Alaska to invest something in what we think it will benefit Alaska. Next page. Now in this project here, it's so big. We committed to using 100% union labor, skill and non-skill, so that the people who are Alaskan will have first preference to work on this job. The Alaska can work on this job getting good money, like David Bacon's wages. And if people don't understand what does it mean, I just give you an example. I'm working on Pond Lake last summer. We get our electrician crew there putting airport one-way lighting for Pond Lake. We had to pay $50 an hour. They're all IBEW member. We had to hire, my company has a 25-year signatory agreement with IBEW already. So we hire all our crew from IBEW. They get $50 an hour. Also, because so far away, out of town, we agreed to work them 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. So it's a 60 working hour. Because the 20 hour is overtime, so we pay them 1.5 according to the state law. So basically, they're getting 70 hours a week of wages. 70 times 50 is a 3,500 a week. 1 month has a 4.33 week. So you multiply 4.33 with a $3,500 a week, is $15,000 a month. This job will last 3 to 4 years. And who doesn't want to work on this project? This is a big job because we're not just building the gas pipeline, we're also building the world-class LNG plant and petrochemical industry for the Alaska. And that's the way we can keep our, besides the construction job, we also have engineering job, we also have a surveyor job, or scientists to do environmental study, or all related jobs, like shipping, transportation company, supplier. I mean, job after job create through the chain. And they all good job because this is let's put it this way, this job is the biggest construction project in the United States, maybe in the world too. Because the last biggest construction project in China, the Three Gorge Dam, is only cost $25 billion, and this one cost $32 billion. So we don't want our kid grow up here. I get 4 children, and my friend Wayne has 3 children. They all grow up in Alaska school system. And then when they go to college, go low 40, go to college, when they graduate, they could not find job in Alaska. So they have to stay in low 48 because there's no good job here. And his children are all in low 48 too. I mean, they get good education. They all go to colleges and get advanced degree, professional degree, but they cannot find job here. One of my youngest daughter is a lawyer. She practices in Atlanta now, but because she cannot find job here. She came back to Anchorage one summer, worked for the municipality law department as an intern, but they told her, don't bother to apply the permanent job because we don't have any job for you. So she decided not to come back because nobody will hire her, so she found a job in Atlanta. And that's one of my concerns is our children need to stay here to run our state, to be, but you have to give them a good job. And that's very important, good job. Not something you flip hamburger or a tour guy or work in the hotel to fix the bed, or work in the kitchen, you know, that kind of job. We want something that is, if a blue collar, they should make good David Bacon wages. If a professional job, they should make good professional money. I think the faith and the future of Alaska is in your guys' hand, because you are the one can determine you want to create job or you want to give it to Canada to create job. Next page. Now, under our teaming agreement, and the letter of intent, China agreed to help to financing the 70 capital financing, which is not guaranteed by the federal government, 70%. And they will have no problem to raising money for you, which is in turn, the first Alaska pipeline company will take over the loan and retain the debt through the tariff and the profit they make. But meantime, you don't have to go to Wall Street to raising money. It's already there. Next page. Now, this country have been buying lots of stuff from China. And they have been outsourcing everything to China. The government, the corporation, have been deindustrialized our country. I'm a U.S. citizen for 33 years. I want to talk to you folks. We own China lost money. Every year is a $2 billion, $200 billion deficit. And we already own them $1.4 trillion already. And you cannot keep on going like that, because eventually you don't have anything to sell. You don't sell anything right now. Very little trade. Every year, last 8 years of this government administration, every year is in deficit between $200 billion to $450 billion. And our Alaska First Gas Pipeline is not just benefit Alaska, it also benefit United States of America. United States keep borrowing money. What will happen is it drive our currency worthless. Few years back, I go to Canada. It's you give 75 cents U.S. will trade $1 for Canada. Now it's a even up. Several years ago, I went to China. $1 equal to $8.50 of a renminbi. Now it's a $1 to $7 renminbi. And then a few years later will be $1 equal to $1 renminbi or $1 equal to 10 cents of Canadian money. You see, I don't want to see that. I want to see Americans strong. But in order to keep our country strong, we got to have a trade. Trade is a two-way street. You go to the dictionary. Trade means I sell you something, you sell me something back. You cannot keep buying stuff and using transfer this country's wealth or individual to China and don't want to get something back from them. And that's why I say my plan is good for United States. You bring in $30 billion surplus every year for 30 years, which is about $800-900 billion. That's a big sum. $900 billion is a 9 times 11 zero behind it. It's a loss of money. And the only way United States can sell is the gas, which is there's no benefit in lower 48, because by the time you ship it down there, you get $8. And you sell to China, and after the $8, you spend about $4.50 on the tariff, so you get $3.50 left. $3.50, you're gonna give a dollar to Uncle Sam, $1.50 to the shipper, the producer. What have you left? $1 for the state. But then you got to give them $2 billion to ship the gas, subsidize them to move the gas down to lower 48 too. So basically, you don't get nothing. You don't lose something. And if that go on, American just will not become a world power again. In fact, we already lost our power, losing our resources and energy already. Next page. Okay.
Mr. Lee,
yes.
Let me ask you, Mr. Lewis, are you going to do a presentation addition? Or?
It hopefully will be brief. I have a few things to contribute to this.
So, we're probably going to have to go to semi-cruise control.
Okay. Yeah, this shipping natural gas to China, to the Far East, have been done in the past 40 years from Kenai to Japan. So it's not something new to export LNG to the Far East. Next page.
Yeah, Senator Wagner.
One question before you go to the next page that kind of relates to your last statement there.
Yeah.
And I assume you're making that statement based on Yukon Pacific holding a export permit from Department of Energy. Is that correct?
I just learned it from them. They have the export license from Department of Energy already.
Right.
But the fact is, Kenai's LNG have been shipping to Japan for the past 40 years.
I understand
that.
But to make that statement, you're operating under the assumption then that that license or that export license will still be valid if a project is done.
And we have to get the Department of Energy to submit revision on it.
That's all.
Yeah. They are the only one have the required to, they are required the government agency, the one that permit export.
Senator, may I amplify just a little bit here? Wouldn't you know, I stepped out of the room when you had one question on Yukon Pacific. The current export license is held by Yukon Pacific through its parent company, CSX. It speaks in terms of million metric tons a year for an aggregate of 350 million metric tons authorized for export, with an annual average of 14 million tons. That's a 2 billion cubic foot a day project, in essence. It doesn't, there's no ceiling. It calls for an average. Theoretically, export more in a given year, but overall, it works out to 14 million metric tons per year.
I guess my question was, though, how valid is that license? Now, ConocoPhillips just went through a process to extend their export license, hopefully for up to 2 years.
Yeah.
And even with the concurrence of the administration now, they still have not got that extension.
Yeah.
So how long supposedly is this export license good for, and what would it take to get the DOE to give a letter saying that export license is still valid and would be renewable? That's, I guess, my question.
Yeah. I'm going to have to do a little research. I hope to plug in Jeff Lowenfels, who actually was involved in all that. So was I, but not in the detail Jeff was. Essentially, I'm not aware of any expiration date on that export license. Now, I've got to do some homework, but that's all in here, and I've got to flip through here to know. But essentially, I think I'm right.
Okay.
We'll see. But it's close to that answer.
Jeff on the line. Okay, please continue.
Yeah, on this project, too, lots of people were worried about the Chinese are coming, the Chinese are coming. But they are not coming.
No?
They're already here.
There will be no Chinese skilled or unskilled labor allowed on this job.
Ni hao.
Ni hao. So tell them, don't worry about that.
I apologize. I had a run.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
For hearing me. Thank you, sir.
Okay,
next stop.
Good.
Okay, do we have to talk about that?
Mr. Lee,
you
will notice that our ranks are thinning out. It's not because you aren't giving an intriguing presentation, but there's some other demands from members. So we'll just continue on.
Okay. You wouldn't be very long. I'm almost done now.
Yes.
Keep going. Yeah. This is a teaming agreement. We're going to sign it in Puyang City with the Sinopec people. Next page. Talk about that already, and now this is very intriguing, which is on your last pages. Let's What it does is I give different kind of sale price, and without the PPP tax, just a straight 2% real estate tax, 9.4% corporation income tax, 35% federal income tax, and less the tariff. If we sell it for example, $12, the annual revenue will be $18 billion. U.S. government share will be $3.76 billion. State of Alaska will get $3 billion. The North Slope producer will get $6 billion. And the pipeline operator will get $600 million, which is about $0.59 billion. Now, if you go by the real cost, which is I use for energy information agencies figure for $20 per year, per $20 per for MCF, you. The revenue will be almost $30 billion a year. The U.S. share is $7.3 billion. State of Alaska share is $10.47 billion. The North Slope producer will get $6.8 billion, and the operator will get $600 million. Now that is including the PPT tax of 25%. So in 30 years, the total revenue is $896 billion, almost $900 billion. The U.S. share is $219 billion. State of Alaska will get $314 billion, and North producer will get $204 billion. And the operator will get $17.7 billion for 30 years.
That's over the 30-year period.
The 30-period, yeah, okay. Right?
Yes.
But you compare this TransCanada data on page 2.10.10. They say the U.S. share is $52 billion. So U.S. government will get much less money. They're using the PPT tax too.
Yeah, and that's over a 30-year period.
I think they are 25.
That's 25.
25 year.
Okay.
State of Alaska get 131. You see, the difference between 314 and 131, you talk about $160 billion difference going to Valdez and make LNG product, because LNG product worth more money than just gas. And almost double, more than double.
Yep.
So you're talking about apple to apple is $100 billion more.
Mr. Lee, we have a question from Senator, yes, Wilikowski.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you have any conversations with the North Slope producers about whether they would be willing to sell you their gas?
I was so confident that I will pass the first cut. So before they announce it, I talked to Sinopec and request them that I will go to Beijing and meet with them and ConocoPhillips China representative, as Exxon Mobil representative in China, and also the BP China representative. They said they have no problem. We can set up a meeting for you. Because ConocoPhillips is doing a big joint venture with China Oil in Bak Hoi Bay oil field. They get about 300,000 gallons of oil every day. And they were joint venture 50-50 with China. And plus they got other joint venture too. And ExxonMobil, they got a big $5 billion project with China to do refinery and also petrochemical project in China. They are teaming with Sinopec as a partner. And then the other one, the BP, because they bought out Arco, all the Arco China joint venture in Yellow Sea and South China Sea oil field, they're all working there. Those are three companies, is a partner for Sinopec or PetroChina. And so they talk to each other like BP talk to Exxon right here. So they're no big deal. She said, oh, yeah, we will set up meeting for you. But then when I get the letter, say I'm not even make the short list. So I call them up and ask them to cancel all the meeting set up. But it's possible we can meet them there, or I can meet them here too.
Just one thought.
Yeah, they have, to tell you the truth, the oil company have make lots of money, but then they are very good to Alaska because the benefit from their business, they provide 80 to 90% of a state budget. They are very good citizen. They sponsor symphony or different kind of charity, United Way, and they are very good manufacturer. They hire lots of Alaskan work on their field. I mean, they've done their part. As far as I'm concerned, I worked for Arco for 10 years, my company did, to help them to develop the Kuparuk oil field. They are very nice people, very cautious, very, very honest, and they always pay me on time too. And what I'm saying is we can all work together. I think Sinopec had the crowd, they are just as big as they are. They're not as big as Exxon, but they are as big as ConocoPhillips. And they talk to each other all the time. They got other joint ventures. Sinopec and BP had a big joint venture in other country. And in fact, they are talking about teaming up with one of the oil company, I forgot which one, to bid on that Angola oil field lot number 46, which is going to be bid on March the 6th. So they are corresponding, talking to each other. It's not something like they are enemy or business competitor, you know, because the world has oil everywhere. Natural gas is everywhere too. China is buying gas from all over the world, buying oil too, because they need the energy to make the gadget, ship it to America. I mean, you cannot running sewing machine without electricity, and you cannot make those petrol. They do all kind of stuff you see in Walmart. They all require energy to make it. Also require petrochemical product to make it, lots of them. So this is, like I say at the beginning of my speech, this is a globalization. But you want to believe in free trade, globalization, people should be sit down together, work out who do what and how to make money which will benefit everybody. And that's what I'm proposing is I don't mind to work with Harold Hines and Alaska Port Authority or even BG Group, you know, or any Trans Canada or Mid American. I will invite them to bid on the pipeline to build for me. I mean, this is open process. It's not something I will be signing a secret deal with you, you know. everything will be up and slop. And I will hire a big American construction management firm during construction, like CH2M here or Beto or Ford, to run the project for me. So everything is done right, it's done on time, it's done within the budget. But Sinopec will provide the funding for you. I mean, they just want to tell you, we want to trade with Alaska. We will do everything we could to help you. You need help. We want your resources, such as fish and timber, but we also want your gas. You want to sell it. So all in all, I think with Sinopec, we might be able to work out any disagreement between different parties.
And just for clarification, Mr. Yeah. Lee, as I recall, you said that your proposal is not reliant upon federal guarantees. Is that accurate or not?
No. On my proposal, I asked for federal guarantee.
Okay.
I got to go to the Algeria guideline.
Right.
We are open season, but I just find out from my friend Wing, since I met him a month ago, if you transport gas from Puto Bay to Valdi, you don't need FERC. You don't need to have open season. And my proposal is if I was selected, I would go to meet those three oil production company. I want to buy the gas from your wellhead. Sell it to me. I got a customer to buy it. So you'll be up to them. Say, yes, we will sell to you because we see your bottom line. You can benefit me. $204 billion in 30 years. They don't have to invest any money. They don't have do anything to get this competition. See, the oil company just put the gas on my pipeline and we will pay him. So there's no investment involved, and for their own stockholders' benefit, they should take this deal because we are the one taking all the risk. They don't have any risk. They just sit back and creep and sell the gas or the wellhead and get paid.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah, thank you, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. There have been claims by another organization that they were pressured not to apply under AGEA. Did you experience anything like that?
No. I think nobody tell us not to do anything. And also because we don't let anybody know about it, because we only have about 3 weeks to write this proposal after I come back from China. So I didn't contact anybody. I just keep writing. In fact, we submit the proposal at November 30, 4:10. Only have 15 minutes to spare.
Thank you.
May I make a comment, Senator?
Yes, Senator. Yeah.
And I'll finish up my part in a hurry because I know we've been here a long time. Without having been involved, it strikes me that the AGEA requirements the application requirements weren't really written for an LNG project. I mean, it presupposes things like open seasons, and it just—I don't know how he got in as well as he did, because it's a tortured fit. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean it. I've been in and around LNG now for 15 years, and some of the great benefits of an LNG project is, one, it's not a commodity market. The lower 48 states is you don't know the price next Tuesday. But in an LNG project, When you have a potential, and this is a term we can use here, think of an LNG project as a regional shopping center. You just landed Nordstrom. You can go to an ATM to get your money. I'm being a little facetious. I'm saying, though, what you have in the strength of a Sinopec is that anchor tenant that we've really never had for an LNG project or any kind of project. They bring so much heft to a project that they are that AAA tenant that makes the project financeable, and it doesn't require any federal help. It doesn't require any state help. It's a standalone deal. I know he submitted an AGIA proposal. I know why he did. We didn't know each other. He didn't know anything really about the work, the literally 15 years of work in place by Yukon Pacific. And the reason I'm here, my partner is Jeff Lohenfels, we are volunteering our time because we can see instantly the synergies between all of the work already in place by Yukon Pacific. And what you have in front of you is a greatest hits version of that work. And what that work does to dramatically diminish the risk in the project and the time it takes to build it. I mean, it's a royal flush of permits, authorizations, right-of-way agreements, so on. And the reason we did what you have before you is because it is completely misunderstood. We have people holding forth on this project, and you've heard it, who don't know what they don't know. And so in place, there's been no marriage yet between this proposal and the holders of these permits, but it's so logical because, after all, the permits have no value without a project. They have tremendous value to all the players with a project, export licenses, on and on and on. And I was going to, I know we're running out of time, I was going to bring Jeff Lohenfels in by phone. If you want me to, I can. We're always available to try to expand on what I've given you here. But what this portfolio of authorizations, permits, and so on does to this project is streamline it in a way that's really unmatched in any other way. And so you have, although they're not married yet, the anchor tenant that we've been dying for up here, and a design. And remember, there's a lot of engineering work already in place in support of these permits and authorizations. So there's a real shorthand at work here if the pieces can be brought together. So that, in short, is what I came along to express.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. In that respect, going into the future, and let me just reflect back to what Governor Hickel, the message that the committee received from him was, number one, we need to look at potentially restarting the process. And you mentioned AGIA, and I will get back to that in a moment. In one of his comments was he supports AGIA, but we may need to amend AGIA, I think was kind of the way he put that. We would be interested in hearing from you, from your perspective, in the future, after you give us some thought, amendments that might be appropriate as it applies to LNG. But the biggest gift, I think, that and Governor Hickel being the person that he is and the things he keeps on giving to the state of Alaska, was he got the administration to buy into a baseline comparison between a Canadian course of action and an LNG course of action, which some people have been pushing for unsuccessfully. But I think it's basic criteria you have to enter the conversation armed with those pieces. But modifications beyond, just come to mind. You mentioned open season. Anything immediately come to mind that you said AGIA was not crafted for LNG?
Well, that's the one that comes to mind. I okay. There probably are others. It contemplates North Slope shippers. Somewhat, the AGIA process seems to contemplate a standard pipeline transmission system which charges a tariff to shippers.
Right.
If you buy $2 billion, whatever you buy at the wellhead, you're your own shipper. You own the project.
Right. Yeah.
So, and when you think in terms of tariffs and so on, it doesn't work because at the end of the pipeline is an LNG plant, not a market.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah. No, no, precisely.
Yeah.
And thanks for pointing that out. That's very important for us to get to get this with. Questions? Well, Mr. Lee, this is only my opinion, but you brought a lot to the table. And we say thank you. I mean, you were like a hard drive, you know, whipping off aspects. And I can tell, obviously, anyone can tell that you put a lot of work into this. And for that, we say thank you. And it's not over yet, so we'll see where it goes. And yes, Mr.
May I make one final comment? Having about 50 pounds of shrapnel in my hide. Because of my work over this many years, doesn't even come close to matching Jeff Lowenfeld's amount of shrapnel in his hide. This is one of the most astonishing things I have ever heard of. After all, an entrepreneurial individual citizen has brought in at least a serious overture. I mean, talk about beyond belief. It really is. Really is astonishing. Deserves a lot of attention because of the weight of this buyer.
Yeah, clearly out of the box. Clearly out of the box, planning wise. Mr. Lee, any summary comments?
I also want to let you know my company submit a letter for us, the governor and the commissioner, to reconsider my Algeria application, and I. At least the reason they deny my application was a true misunderstanding of the people who review it, and that's true on the application. You cannot add anything on the commitment, but then on the page 12. Of the application, they say you give the state extra commitment, which we did. Like we give them the buyer, we also give them financing. You could add additional commitment and condition on the new thing, which is I did. And I think they're confusing my additional commitment for together with the extra commitment is a part of the original commitment, and for that reason they deny my application. I think that was just a misunderstanding. I asked them to clarify them, and we will give you a copy of our letter to the state too.
What was the date of your letter?
Friday.
Friday, this past Friday?
Yeah, past okay. Friday.
Okay, very good, very good.
And I think if the law department review it, they probably will think we got some merit on it.
Okay. Well, again, Mr. Lee, thank you very much.
Yeah, I have really honor and appreciate you give me this opportunity. And like I say, I've been in this country since 1962. My airplane landed to the Anchorage Airport on September the second. It was a beautiful stay, and people were very, very nice to me, and I told myself I'm going to come back and live here. So I came back in 1977 after I got all my college degree and experience, and I've been living here since then. I make a good living here, and I raise four children, but one of the problems is, like I say, there's no job for them, and I want this day will never happen again. They will have good job for the children, and so that when they grow up, they don't have to leave the state. They can stay right here and work with grandfather and grandmother.
Yes, sir. Well, we once again on behalf of the committee and the state of Alaska, we say thank you very much.
Thank you again.
Thank you.